supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, 'tis the season to build raised beds. It's much easier to do it in the fall and hit the ground running in the spring than it is to wait for everything to thaw out to get started next season. But what should you fill those beds with? And how do you use the amazing fall leaves most of us are being graced with? We'll answer all those questions after lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Cindy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, hi.
Hello, Cindy. How are you?
I'm fantastic. And you?
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's exceptional. I am just ducky. Thank you. Where is Cindy fantastic?
Topeka, Kansas.
All right. As I imagine everyone in Topeka is, correct?
I should hope.
Okay. What can we do for Cindy in Topeka?
Well, Cindy in Topeka loves squash, and I battled a squash bug, of course. And I search and seize and smash them when I can, but I'd love to not use chemicals to get rid of the nasty boogers so I can have great squash crops later in the season.
Now, when you talk about squash bugs, you're talking about the bugs that actually crawl on the squash plant and transmit disease and not the vine borers that attack down at the soil line.
These actually crawl on the vine and the leaves, and if you see one, like in 3 days, much of the vine is wilted, or it's distal from where you see the bug, it's wilted.
Yes, one of the problems with squash bugs is they transmit disease to the plants. I think the disease that they pass along is actually much worse for the long-term health of the plant than any feeding the bug does.
Okay.
Okay, so you're in Kansas. You're growing in raised beds. Are you growing in flat earth?
Both.
Okay. Have you ever used row covers?
I have not.
First thing I'm going to suggest is in the spring when we put out our plants, we put them out a little larger than normal. Do you buy your plants or start them from seed?
Well, I usually start them in early February.
That is kind of early. Do you have them under good lights inside?
I have a glass screen patio that gets the sound exposure all day long.
Oh, but no artificial light?
Uh-uh.
And when do you plant them out, Cindy, in Kansas? I would think that it would be May 15th.
Most people like to wait until after Mother's Day, but if I'm good about watching it every day and I'm not traveling anywhere, I can take care of them, put them out whenever the ground is warm.
Okay, so I think one of the problems here is you're rushing the season. You're starting out with weak plants. Any article you read about squash bugs is going to say start out with the healthiest transplants you can and don't put them outside until nights are in the 50s consistently. You know, if it drops down to 49 one night, that's okay.
Of course.
But the thing is not just frost, Cindy. I mean, these are tropical plants that have no sense of humor about nights in the 30s.
Certainly.
So you start out with bigger, stronger plants. I think you're starting them too early for, you know, you and I have about the same setting out date. And I start my plants in March, right after the Philly Flower Show is over, generally around March 15th. That's like 2 months to get them ready to go outside. Any more than that, and they're going to start to get leggy, especially without artificial light. So I think you want to start out with bigger, healthier plants being put out later in the season. And I want you to take a look at putting row covers on hoops over them early in the season when they go out. You and I both know squash needs to be pollinated by bees, so those covers have to come off eventually. But if you keep them on for the first month until you see lots of flowers forming on the plants will be much stronger, much bigger, and much better able to resist attack.
Okay, well, I put a swarm of ladybugs, but they've taken care of aphids and things, of course not these squash bugs.
Right. If you're going to, I'm not sure of what kind of beneficial insect or predator would go after squash bugs other than toads.
Toads or mantis is the thing I was thinking. I didn't know, though.
Yeah, well, we don't really endorse bringing mantises into the garden. They're all imported species now anyway. They've killed off all the American ones. But if you make a shady spot for toads to hide in during the day, shady and damp, and put out pools of water on the garden floor, they are a voracious predator. They're probably the best predator.
Okay.
Stronger, healthier plants early in the season, and go online, go to our website and read our article on attracting toads to your garden, and I think you'll get this in hand.
Sounds wonderful.
All right, Cindy, good luck.
Okay, bless you, and thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ken, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you?
I am just ducky today, Ken. Thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm well.
And where is Ken well?
Ken is well in the great county of Berks in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Berks County. You know, we got Berks, we got Bucks, we got Montgomery, we got Lehigh, the counties that radiate out from Philadelphia.
Yes. I'm actually outside of Boyertown and upper Montgomery County, and they're having problems with the spotted lanternfly.
Well, the reason I know a lot about this, enough to get in trouble, and about your locale, is I live near the Five Fingers, where Lehigh County, Bucks County, Berks County, and Montgomery County all kind of come together in a strange form. And that's where this new imported pest has made its first appearance. Interestingly enough, you know, the marmorated stink bug, the new stink bug from Asia that's causing so many problems, was first discovered in that same general area. It was discovered in Lehigh County.
Yes.
And the first spotting of the lantern fly, which I believe was in Berks County, right?
Imported rocks from one of the local quarries up there.
Yeah. So, you know, two imported vicious insects that were first seen like 30 miles apart.
Yes.
Okay, so what can we do for you about the lanternfly? Have you seen it or anything?
Oh, yeah. When you first see them, you're not sure what you're looking at because it looks like part of the bark. But then if you go around the tree and you look at them, they're actually perched on the tree. And it seems like they go after the smooth barked woods, you know, mostly the maples. I see them on a lot of my maple trees, and they say they go after the fruit trees and the grapevines and stuff like that.
That's my big fear, yeah, is that they're going to get, you know, because they're all around me, but I have not yet seen them. I've seen photos of them, and they're incredibly colorful. They almost look like a clown costume.
Yeah, they actually, when they fly like a butterfly, and they're black.
But when they land, you see spots and stuff, right?
They are brown. You don't see the color until you kill them. And the other thing is, when they nest for the winter, obviously the adults die. But over winter, they have these little, it looks like light brown mud on the bark. And it could be in like a little hole in the bark, like let's say it got damaged. They'd actually go under the bark a little bit and put the egg sacs there. And that's probably how they got in from Asia on these rocks. They've probably didn't notice them.
Yes, I've been told that the biggest transmission source right now is people taking firewood around.
Yes.
Because it just looks, as you said, like there's a little bit of mud on the firewood.
Right.
We've had people on the show many times over the years begging people not to take firewood from one county to another, much less like take it to their vacation home so they can burn it in their fireplace. I've also heard that they've laid their eggs on the sides of automobiles, on the sides of their cars and tires, and it just looks like a mud splash.
It does. And, you know, they showed pictures of 4x4s, you know, like posts on a fence, things like that. You just go, oh, okay. So it's just something that unless you actually see it and somebody takes you and says, this is what it is, it's really scary, I think, because these are very invasive.
And the purpose of your call is to alert people in Berks, Bucks, Montgomery, Lehigh.
Mostly Upper Montgomery, Berks County, definitely, Reading area, south from Reading into Boyertown. People that have a hand on this are trying to keep it contained, but
yes.
I don't see it.
Right. So for people outside of our listening area, we're talking about a new invasive insect. This is only its second year in the country that
right.
has been discovered in what other people would consider the suburbs of Philadelphia. And
right.
it is imperative that people not move firewood around. And it would not be a bad idea to inspect your plants,
yes.
to look for these egg masses. And all you have to do is search spotted lantern fly on
right.
the web, and you'll see good pictures of the adults and the egg masses.
Exactly.
All right, Ken, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
All right, you take care, sir.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will once again host the annual Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families. This year's event is Wednesday, November 16th at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Chestnut Hill, with seatings at 4, 5:30, and 7 o'clock, and beautiful bowls for all. But don't go looking for all the details at the event section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with important information about raised beds and shredded leaves and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up in a little bit, this is a great time of year to make your raised beds so you can, quote, hit the ground running next season. But what do you fill those beds with? We'll tell you what you should and shouldn't use and how to make the best use of your shredded leaves, re those beds, after lots of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Barbara, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thanks. Nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here, Barb. Where actually are you?
I'm in Malvern, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia.
Very good. What can we do for Barb in Malvern?
I moved into my house about 4 years ago and was delighted to find on my property some very well-established beautiful lace cap hydrangeas. I actually have four of them, actually. And the first year I was here, they bloomed beautifully. And then I thought, well, I'm supposed to be doing something to take care of these hydrangeas.
Ha, 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 ha. Yes. Yes, I am a gardener. So it is my duty to seize defeat from the jaws of victory. The plants are blooming beautifully. So I have to do something to change that.
Yes, because I thought I was supposed to prune them. In fact, I looked it up online. You know, am I supposed to prune my hydrangeas? And if so, when? So I did that. And I did that 1 year and got good growth back and didn't get reasonable blooming. So then last year I thought, okay, not pruning, just going to leave the sticks and let them come back without pruning. And this year I really got no blooms.
Well, actually you did. But you never got to see them. Now, when you did your first initial pruning, what do you remember what time of year that was?
Yeah, it was in the fall.
Okay. Yeah, there's a very simple mnemonic for, like, knowing what to prune in the fall. It's nothing. Nothing. Stay inside. There is so much bad pruning advice out there. But it's really easy if we just think about what's happening. Like us, our plants are going dormant now as the weather gets colder and the days get shorter. And pruning always stimulates growth. European gardeners understand this a lot better than American ones. So anytime you prune a plant, except in the very dead of a northern winter when they are sound asleep, you're demanding that they regrow. But this isn't a good time for them to grow. They need to send that energy down to the root system to survive winter. And that new growth could be really damaging to the plant if we have a hard freeze. So, and hydrangeas are very strange plants to prune because some types bloom on old wood, some types bloom on new wood. But the last 2 years, anything that went bad was not your fault. This past winter, the one we just came through, people felt we had a late frost at the end of it. We did not. What we had was the warmest winter in history. So the plants never really went as dormant as they would have liked to. We're kind of growing, actively growing, still during a time when in the old days it used to be winter. So then we did have a series of nights in the teens and 20s, which was well before the time when we're expected to be out of that. You know, it was very normal, but the winter hadn't been. And almost all of the fruit trees in my area, for instance, lost their flowers. There were no crops. The only reason I got peaches off of one of my trees is I hung old-fashioned Christmas lights in the tree. And left the lights on at night to protect the flowers. So last year, the flowers got blasted. Two winters ago was the harshest winter in memory, and the plants were just stone killed. So you are off to a good start now. You know, a lot of this gardening has to do with what nature wants. But is there wood mulch or anything around the base of the plants? Have you fed them anything like that?
I just use compost, you know, a mixture of manure and compost in the springtime.
I would not put any manure on flowering plants, but compost, yes. And now what's going to happen, provided we don't have one of these crazy situations, is your plants will green up at the normal time. And then they'll start to produce their flowers. And after you see all the flowers being produced, that's the only safe time to prune hydrangeas. That's when you can go in and you can take out any sticks that are just truly brown and dead. You can also, at that point, remove a couple of green branches if there's no sign of flowers on them and they're kind of hiding the flowers from view.
Okay.
This is the great trick that professionals understand is hydrangeas really need to set their flowers to show you what's going on for that season. And then as soon as those flowers are set, and this is really the only plant I know that you prune like this, as soon as the flowers are all set, then you can go in and remove anything that's dead, and you can also remove anything that is blocking the view of the flowers, or you can even reduce the plants in size by a little bit. But that's when you do it without any harm to the plant, and you don't limit a single flower.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Barb.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Mike.
1-888-346-9499. Bradley, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours, too, Bradley. Where's yours coming from?
Morehead City, North Carolina.
Okay, very good. What a beautiful part of the country. What can we do for you, Brad?
I have a church that has a flat earth garden. They give the vegetables to the local food bank.
Excellent.
But they always fertilize with horse manure.
Okay.
Year after year after year, and I've been trying to get them to understand about the hardwood leaf shredded compost, but they just ignore me. I'm trying to figure out how to be not ignored.
So how does their garden look? How are their harvests doing?
Well, 1,500 pounds this year.
Yeah, but I mean, that could be a little or a lot. But I mean, they're getting good harvests from their plants. They're having good success, right?
They are having good success.
Well, then, you know what? I would say that there's something going on that we don't understand, and that sometimes people can kind of break the rules and get away with it. Now, traditionally, the issues with horse manure is that if you use it before it's completely composted, it'll be a weedy mess because the horses don't have a very efficient digestive system. But even after it's fully composted, it is felt to be too nitrogen-rich to be a complete balanced fertilizer. You know, the old joke is, you know, I fed my tomato plants composted horse manure and I got 50-foot-high tomato plants with two tomatoes each. But, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. I haven't researched this in a long time, but I'm sure there's going to be nutrient differences in horse manure based on what the horses eat, you know, whether they're grass fed and, you know, they can graze out in the open most of the year, which would certainly be much more true in North Carolina than it would in Massachusetts or something.
Right.
So the nutrient balance might be different there. Plus, you know, I have to assume in Morehead City that the soil is very sandy. So even though that sandy soil doesn't hold nutrients well, it does drain well, and it contains a lot of minerals. So I'm going to suggest, I mean, with any kind of gardening, yes, there is good advice, there's bad advice, there's rules, there's breaking the rules. But if somebody is doing something and they're having repeated success, I don't see any reason to change that just because philosophically or ideally it wouldn't work for other people. There's something happening. There's some sort of symbiotic relationship with what the horses are eating, how the manure is handled, and then when it's mixed in with that mineral-rich sandy soil that is somehow making it a more balanced nutrient. You know, one of the most important things with your sandy soils is to just add a lot of organic matter almost in any form. Yes, a compost made from shredded fall leaves would be ideal. Even topsoil would probably work well. But in this case, I'm going to suggest that even though it would be bad advice in other places, something good is happening, and I would just congratulate them on their success, and I wouldn't tell them to change a thing.
Thank you very much. I'll back off and see how the garden grows.
Yes, and this is good advice from me as well, to remember that no matter how much I believe something is always going to happen, nature and physical reality will always throw you a wild card. And in this case, it's a good wild card. And if there's anything I've learned in 30 years, it's don't mess with success, whether it makes sense or not.
I'll keep that in mind.
All right. Good luck, Brad, and thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Eileen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Eileen. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
I am just ducky, thank you. Where is Eileen doing well?
In Fort Washington, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Just outside of Philadelphia, one of the most deer-infested areas on the planet.
Yes. Agreed. One of the most deer-infested areas of the planet. However, the problem that I have is within a fenced area, so it's not deer-related.
Okay, good.
I have a row of arborvitaes, about a dozen of them, that were planted between 10 and 15 years ago. I don't recall exactly when.
Right.
I lost two during Sandy up on one end of the row, and at the other end of the row, further towards the back of the yard, they've just been going dead, really, just losing all color, the branches turning brown. You know, originally when we put them in the row, it was to hide the pool side of the, we're right on the street there, so it was really just to use it as a fence. And when
right.
they were planted in the first couple of years, we would, you know, water them and feed them each spring and then clip the top so that they would grow closer together.
Okay.
But yeah. there's now, I mean, they're about a dozen feet tall. We only did that for the first maybe 3-4 years.
Yeah, but you when you top an evergreen like that, the pointy evergreen, you're always
yeah.
removing the growing part. You're always removing the most living part. Yeah, you're not supposed to have done that. And I mean, it is a very common mistake. People plant evergreens not expecting them to get tall or thinking they can manage the height. And you can manage the height of a deciduous plant. You can manage the height of shrubs. But there is something about topping evergreens that lessens their life. That may be what happened.
The reason I'm suspicious that that isn't the problem is because what is now affecting on the low end of the run of the trees is they're dying one by one. They're not, I mean, if I had, and for the, as I said, when we originally topped them, it wasn't more than just what was the new growth. You know, it was just a couple of inches, but I did all of them. And now they're dying one by one by one.
Oh, they love to do that. No. There's something about arborvitae. They are plants from a Warner Brothers cartoon. They're like bowling pins. I always tell people, if you listen to the show, if you plant 8 of them in a row, I guarantee number 5 will be dead in 3 years because it's the hardest to replace.
We've had these for well over 10 years.
So the big causes of death of arborvitae are an insect called bagworms that are caterpillars, but the nests they make and live in look like little pine cones. And their favorite plant is the arborvitae. So you really don't notice them. It looks like a natural part of the tree. But over years, they will defoliate it, and the trees will turn brown and die. Poor drainage. If the area collects water, maybe something happened with the Superstorm Sandy that changed the drainage on your property. If that area pools up with water, the trees are not going to make it long term. The other cause is a deep wood mulch, that's over 2 inches deep and or touches the bark, the trunk of the plants.
Okay. So, okay, I think it's either probably the bagworm or the drainage issue, because that is the wettest area down at the end now.
Right. So you will have a very limited palette because it sounds like these trees are gone. So the
there's still 8 good ones, what look to be 8 good, healthy, tall, 10 foot, still, you know, three quarters of the fence is there.
Okay. So what you want to do is you want to inspect them carefully. Bagworms look like little pine cones. And you have to prune them off. The thread that holds them on the branch is like steel. So prune a couple off and then cut them open, and you'll be able to see right away if they're true pine cones or if they're these bagworms. And if you do have bagworms, get as many as the bags off the trees as you can. And then in the spring, be ready to spray with BT, the old original organic caterpillar killer. You can get it at any big independent garden center. And it only affects caterpillars that are eating the sprayed parts of the plant. So when the caterpillars come out of the bags to feed, they'll be done with. And then don't use any fertilizer in that area. Try to keep the area clear around the base of the plant. If you're going to mulch, mulch with compost. And if it is not draining, you can try being proactive. Just at the edge of the drip line, which an arborist or a plant specialist or some research will be able to help you determine, you want to core aerate. You want to pull plugs out of the soil to try to improve the drainage. Now, if you're starting to get bare spots, don't try to replant exactly where the old trees were. Plant something in front of them, like a couple of staggered ornamental grasses, so they'll fill in the bare spots and still hide the view. But don't do it in a straight line. That rarely works long term because the plant's roots start to entangle each other.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you. I'm going to try. Thanks very much.
All right. Good luck, Eileen.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will once again happily host the annual Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families this Wednesday, November 16th, at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Chestnut Hill, PA. You get to sample delicious soups donated by area restaurants and take home a unique, locally crafted empty bowl that you'll choose from a room full of beautiful bowls. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with important information about raised beds and shredded leaves and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. A listener has built brand new raised beds and filled them with peat moss, composted cow manure, and tilled in fall leaves. Yes, those are three big X's, but we'll help him remediate all those mistakes and tell you how to really fill your beds for proper planting after a couple more of your proper phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Mike, how are you?
I am just ducky today, John. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, but I'm having trouble with growing fig trees in my local soil here.
Okay. And what soil is local to you, John?
Sandy. We live in the northwest Florida, panhandle of Florida, and it's very sandy around us. We've planted and bought trees from, you know, that are already sprouting.
Right.
From different places. We're trying to get fig trees to grow. What's the secret?
Well, I mean, you're in the panhandle of Florida, right?
Right. Pensacola, Panhandle, Panama City area.
Okay, that's a nice area. Your problem, obviously, is not climate. Well, you know, here in the north, people have to protect their fig trees in the winter or bring them in for the winter. But obviously, in Florida, you not only don't have to do that, you have the potential to get two crops of figs a season.
Right.
And yes, your soil is sandy, but John, it is so much easier to improve sandy soil than it is clay soil. Your soil has one big advantage that figs and most other plants really like in that, and I know this is like a slap in the face, it drains really well, you know.
Yes, we have drainage.
Yes, you have good drainage. In other words, when you water, there's no water left in the soil after an hour. That's drainage that's too good. But here where we have clay soil, the soil never drains, and the plants just die from drowning constantly. And
right.
It's very difficult to change the texture of clay soil. But you can change the texture of your sandy soil very easily. All you need to do, and if you were growing plants that had higher nutritional needs than figs, I would say you would mix in a lot of compost in your soil. But I've got a much cheaper and easier solution for you because figs are low feeders. Most people who have a lot of success don't even feed their figs. They are like raspberries. They produce some of the most amazing fruit from poor soils. So really, all you need to do is get a big load of topsoil delivered and try your best to mix it 50-50 with your sandy soil. If you have a spot where the topsoil can be dumped and you can have a big mound of it, you can even spread it over time. Spread an inch or two on top of the soil, and then it'll work its way down into the sand, or every time it rains, it'll seem to disappear. But in actuality, it's getting down to where you want it. Just keep doing that, literally adding an inch a month or an inch every time you can't see it anymore. And it will then change the texture of your soil to a soil that still drains well, but now has some water holding capacity. There's some real, you know, the only problem with your dirt is there's no dirt in your dirt.
Yeah, it's all sand.
You know, that's there. That's why there's not a lot of plant diversity down at the beach. But it is, honestly, it is really easy. High quality topsoil, any kind of mature compost, anything you can find that you can mix in. Your eventual goal is 50-50, 50% sand and 50% what we'll call dark soil, for lack of a better word.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
I've heard about fig trees here in the South, and they say they either need planted next to a building, and I heard last night that they need to be planted where they can hear your voices.
Ha! I love that.
I do, too.
You know, don't forget, John, that 90% of the population of Florida originally came from someplace like Minnesota. You know, in northern parts of the country, in the Midwest, in places where they get a real winter, you do have to plant a fig tree in a sheltered location. Where you are in Florida, maybe some afternoon shade so that it doesn't get really scorched in the summertime, but your climate is really not that different from where fig trees are native to in the Mediterranean. What's different is the composition of your soil. So in your case, you can buy the lesser expensive bulk soil and get topsoil, and you can just put it on the surface. It'll work its way down. Just keep replacing it on the surface. It'll benefit all of the plants you have. And absolutely, you should talk to them. You should sing. You should have a radio out there playing Italian folk songs. Maybe you'll get three
polka music is what we normally play.
There you go. You'll get three crops a year.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Good luck, John.
Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Trisha, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being had, Trish. Where are you?
Ojai, California, in southern drought country here.
OJAI, is that?
How did you know that?
I love Southern California. I'm a huge fan of the Pacific Coast, and I know all those towns in that area. Yeah, and you've although your drought has lessened a little bit, hasn't it?
No. We got about an inch of rain in these last two rainy patches that we had. That's it. But I'm trying to keep a birch tree alive. I'm from New England, and I have a token birch tree, and I have a fig tree, and two different kinds of lemon, and a blood orange tree.
Okay, so how are the citrus doing? Because they're the most natural plants to have in your region.
Well, I must say that I had over 100 dozen lemons from my Excelsior lemon tree. I was giving them to Help of Ojai Senior Lunch Program.
That's great.
And it was just amazing. It was amazing this year. It was raining lemons in my yard.
Okay, so what can we do for you?
My yard is almost completely weed-blocked to keep the weeds and to keep the scrub jays from planting oak acorns in the ground.
Okay.
So I have mulched the yard, part yard and part garden.
Right.
And after about 3 years where I've walked, it has pulverized the mulch to a very fine silt. And I'm thinking Egypt, back before dams, it would wash down to enrich the soil. So I was wondering, I just wanted a second opinion, mine being the first, about using that pulverized mulch to amend the soil here, there, and everywhere, which always needs doing.
Yes. Once any kind of brown, woody material deteriorates to its final stage, it has essentially become compost and is the best soil amendment.
I wanted to get that second opinion, and now it occurs to me that a friend of mine has a koi pond, and he's harvesting algae on a regular basis.
Right.
And I thought that I could make use of that as well.
Yes, especially anything he's skimming off the bottom of his koi pond is super rich, and your citrus are actually pretty good heavy feeders. If there's a plant on your landscape that you've described that would like something nutrient rich, it's those citrus plants. So yes, that's absolutely great soil amendment. It crosses over into fertilizer.
Right. Well, I was wondering about the breakdown itself, because it's not exactly compost yet. You have to add enough water so that you can allow that to happen. I have a lot of privet hedge around the yard, and I've been using the old leaves that just crunch up, and I've been using those as mulch underneath the privet. But I thought that the silt would be even a better idea, because I'm putting down new mulch, and the good news is I can just scoop it up with a flat shovel and toss it elsewhere and put down my new mulch. So
yes, I would see no problem in moving the old composted material and using that as an actual mulch around your plants, and whatever you're going to get for the replacement, just letting that be your walk-around mulch. In 3 to 5 years, that'll become compost as well.
Right. Okay. Well, that's what I thought. And the only thing I was concerned about is it going to put way too much nitrogen in the soil as it breaks down?
No, just the reverse. If you were to mix wood into your soil, it would absorb nitrogen and steal it from the plants. But no, old mulch that's starting to look like soil is close to compost. No, it's good. And even though it's counterintuitive, your citrus plants, even though they're flowering plants, they actually like a lot of nitrogen. They do well with nitrogen.
Okay, very good. Because with the fig tree, I always crunch up the leaves and work more of that into the soil as well. I heard you talking to somebody about...
All you got to do with the fig tree is try to use some of your gray water, diverted water, to make sure it doesn't get totally dried out.
Every year I cut it down completely to the nub, and it grows up 20 feet. So I'm good on that. I've got that down.
Yeah, well, that's advice that only works in California or Florida, though.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to get on your show, and thank you so very much.
All right. Good luck, Trish. We wish you gentle rains.
Oh, that's what I'm hoping for.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. What should you put in your raised beds? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please read us this week's question.
Sure, Mike. Henry in Ambler, PA writes, I'm making raised beds for my veggies, 4 feet wide as you've suggested. I filled them with soil and was wondering about amendments. Thus far, I've added peat moss and composted cow manure. Do you recommend adding perlite and vermiculite? I'm also tilling in some double shredded leaves. Is this okay?
No, 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 and no. And thank you for bringing this up, just as lots of people are dealing with their fall leaves, because your question is going to help save many gardens. Now, in general, shredded leaves are great, and double shredded leaves are twice as good. If I were a better man, I'd double shred my leaves. But with deadlines and advancing age, I'm happy to get them shredded once.
And I know that you'll use most of those shredded leaves for compost making, and some as a mulch on top of your raised beds, but you won't till any into your soil.
Exactly right. The first reason is tilling itself. While tilling or double digging is necessary to loosen up the soil the first time you make a raised bed, we want to avoid tilling those beds afterwards, as tilling causes soil nutrients to be lost and brings weed seeds to the surface.
Right. One of the benefits of building raised beds is that you create a defined area that you'll never have to step into. No stepping means no soil compaction, so the soil in your bed stays naturally light and loose and doesn't need tilling. At least Henry did one big thing right when he made his beds the recommended 4 feet wide, because that's the width that allows you to reach the center without stepping inside the framed area.
Yeah, but what he tilled into his soil could cause serious problems. Now, there is a long history of tilling in amendments like compost and mushroom soil so that they become well mixed with the native soil you used. And cover crops have to be tilled back into the soil to make use of the nutrients in their biomass. But compost and mushroom soil are pretty much soil, and cover crops are mostly providing nitrogen. However, leaves are all carbon.
And carbon ties up soil nitrogen and makes it unavailable to plants. The only worst thing would be to till wood chips into the soil.
Oh, yeah. Their large particle size would take years to break down. The much smaller particles of those double shredded leaves are going to be a lot easier to remediate.
And just how does one remediate such a problem?
Well, not with cow manure. You have to assume that bagged, composted cow manure is collected from a factory farm where the cows are heavily medicated. And unfortunately, now they're also fed genetically engineered corn that was sprayed heavily with systemic herbicides. And because these herbicides are systemic, meaning that they're absorbed into the genetically engineered plants themselves, the cow's manure, and the cow itself, is going to contain herbicide residues. And although cow manure is kind of nutritionally balanced, it's also cold. It doesn't contain a lot of any nutrients.
And the nutrient he needs is nitrogen to balance out the carbon in the leaves. So the answer is composted horse manure?
It was the answer years ago, but many modern herbicides are so persistent that they survive the composting process even if the animals are just grazing on a sprayed field and aren't getting the herbicide systemically. So I'm going to go out for coffee instead.
Right. Used coffee grounds are widely available and high in nitrogen, but aren't they acidic?
Yeah, and so's the peat moss he used, which was also a bad idea. Now, peat moss is great for acid-loving plants like blueberries, azaleas, and rhododendrons, but not for vegetable beds. So he already needs to mix in some wood ash or lime to neutralize that acidity. And with the coffee grounds, he's just going to need to use a little more.
You said mix in. Are you saying to till again?
Well, we kind of have to. The peat and leaves were tilled in, and so any balancing amendments are going to have to be tilled in as well. So my advice is to collect grounds from a local coffee shop, mix some wood ash or lime in with them, and till it all into the soil. And since we're already tilling again, yes, add some perlite or vermiculite. These natural minerals are great at loosening up heavy soils and making it easier for plants to get air around their roots.
But how much of each thing?
Well, you don't have to worry about the perlite or vermiculite. You can't use too much of either one of those. They don't change the soil pH or its nutrient balance. The volume of coffee grounds and wood ash, that's going to depend on how much of leaves and peat moss he used to begin with. This is where you have to use your own instincts, let it all settle out over the winter, and just see how well things grow in that bed next season. And in the future, only add amendments to the surface of your beds. An inch or two of compost a season to keep the soil fertile, and an inch or two of shredded leaves to keep down weeds and attract earthworms. Well, that sure was some great information about raised beds, tilling, and shredded leaves now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer says she's going to till me into bed if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location and visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, but where you will find the answers to all the garden questions you are going to ask us, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website well-filled. Our untilled intern is Alicia Lester. Raised Up Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our lowdown editor is Al Banks. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. I'm shredding leaves for an hour every day, and it's either keeping me young or making me old, but as Jackson Brown once kind of said, it is not leaving me the same. Leaving, get it? Leaving, like leaves, fall leaves. That's a tough room. I tell you, this room is tough. You know how tough this room is? This room is so tough the waiters have to spread meat tenderizer on all the tables. I tell you, it's a tough room. And I'll chew my way out of it so I can see you again next week. Is all wood mulch equally bad for plants? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss a wood mulch that can be great if you use it correctly, plus your fabulous phone calls.